big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another week of the Mass Effect Lorecast, and we are recording this on March 17th. So, to all my fellow Irishmen or people of Irish ancestry, happy St. Patrick's Day. Jen, how's it going?
Happy St. Patrick's Day. I am wearing my green, and while not drinking Guinness tonight, I am drinking a really good Malbec, so...
I am of Scots-Irish ancestry, and I'm not wearing any green right now, and I'm drinking an IPA, so I feel like I'm committing sacrilege. I probably belong in Irish hell. please, Irish God, forgive me. Irish God, known for forgiveness. Anyway, it is St. Patrick's Day, so it's only fitting that we talk about the sexiest green alien in Mass Effect, and no... Sorry, Thane fans, I'm not talking about Thane. I'm talking about Shiala.
I don't know. I might have to fight you on this one, but I'm not sure. I'm kind of in between. It could go either way. Because Thane is a sexy green alien, but so is Shiala.
They're both mysterious and green. Maybe the green is where the mystery comes from. I think they're the... I can't really think of any other... How many green aliens can you think of in Mass Effect? I can't really think of many that have a name anyway, besides Thane and Shiala.
I mean, like, Aldrell?
Well, and then, yeah.
So...
Not all. Coliad is kind of blue. Dabba-dee-dabba-da.
That's true. the Thorian is green.
Okay, not romanceable, thank God.
Oh, no, that's a level of no.
Tom is actually here with us in chat. Is Tom in the room with us now? Tom is in the room with us now, and he says, Keepers are kind of greenish. They are, except for their little backpacks. Those are red. And thank God we can't romance the Keepers, because I feel like that would be animal abuse.
I feel like some Salarians are also green-toned.
I think so. I'm trying to think of all of the Salarians I know from the comics. And
do we have a green Krogan? I feel like there's a green Krogan.
Like a green faceplate? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not what this episode's about. We are here to talk about Shiala. And why is she so damn hot? So if you don't remember Shiala, do you remember that one Asari that got pooped out of the Thorian bubble? Well, you know, that one who's oddly hot, all circumstances considered. Well, after we fight her clones and we defeat the Thorian, who you just mentioned, that crazy tentacle plant monster releases her hold on her and she turns nice. And she tells us a little bit about Saren's plan. It's all in Mass Effect 1. And here's some of that first conversation that happens with her, just to jog our memories. This happens beneath Zeus Hope, right after we've defeated the Thorian. And let's go ahead and take a listen to a little bit of this, shall we?
I suppose I should thank you for releasing me.
Is everything all right? Are you hurt?
I am fine, or I will be, in time. My name is Shiala. I served Matriarch Benezia. When she allied herself with Saren, so did I. Benezia foresaw the influence Saren would have. She joined him to guide him down a gentler path. But Saren is compelling. Benezia lost her way.
Are you saying Saren can control minds?
Benezia underestimated Saren, as I did. We came to believe in his cause and his goals. The strength of his influence is troubling.
Benezia sought to turn the river and was swept away.
Asari matriarchs are among the most intelligent and powerful beings in the galaxy. How could one fall under Saren's control?
Saren has a vessel, an enormous warship unlike anything I've ever seen. He calls it Sovereign. It can dominate the minds of his followers.
Ah, yes. A warship. I'm sorry, a warship. There we go. I'm doing the Turian air quotes. We've since dismissed that claim. So Shiala is basically being a lore vehicle here. But I mean, she also says something right there at the end about that Sovereign can dominate the minds of his followers. But Jen, do you remember that Shiala was actually one of Benezia's followers?
I knew that she was one of Benezia's followers, but I didn't know that it was before that Benezia and Saren started working together. I thought that, you know, that they were already established as like this, quote, power couple, you know, like out there doing these things. But that kind of led me to think about she had seen the willpower and influence that Benezia had and totally believed in her before any of the Saren interactions. So, of course, she would have thought that a matriarch would have been able to sway the course of a Turian.
I mean, it's like a reasonable expectation, considering not just the stature that matriarchs have in Asari society, but also among Citadel space. So it's like a reasonable expectation to have there, not to mention the fact that, like, she is also a commando. She's an Asari commando. Check out her armor in that first scene. She's wearing the same Asari commando armor that we see elsewhere in Mass Effect 1. And of course, since she is an acolyte, right, of Matriarch, that is also where Asari commando are found, we fight some of the commandos protecting Benezia on Novaria. So I can't believe I forgot. I either forgot this or it just took me this long to realize that she is an Asari commando. That's why she's such a tough enemy when we do have to fight her clones before we can kill the Thorian. And it's also probably why Benezia brought her into such a trusted role.
I agree with you. But do we ever find out why she is there specifically?
It's kind of a flimsy explanation, but the way that she tells us is that Saren needed her biotics to talk to the Thorian. I don't really understand how that works. Maybe I'm missing something basic here, but why would, like, biotics give you the edge?
So I think that's a lie. I think that is a straight up lie, because why is it Shiala's biotics? Saren is a biotic
as
himself.
As is Benezia. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, we see Saren using throw and warp during our fight on Vermeier. So I don't think that it was biotics. I think that it was the mind meld, but Saren didn't want to admit to that.
Yeah, and Saren would probably know that that's extremely risky to do, so maybe he just told Shiala, hey, it's your biotics, but she's, like, smart enough to understand that she wouldn't be needed for that purpose. Like, she was essentially sacrificed, although to her it looked like a betrayal.
Well, would she even be able to determine that if she's under indoctrination and your mind owner says, go do the thing, and this is why?
That's fair. That clip that we just played is literally, like, one of the first, like, couple minutes of her getting free from any kind of indoctrination, because first she was indoctrinated by Sovereign and then went right into being indoctrinated by the Thorian. So, like, this is the first time that her mind is her own for quite a while, right? So, yeah, maybe she just hasn't put two and two together yet. It's not like she's had a ton of time for self-reflection.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it also, you know, that leads me to question how exactly Saren knew to go visit Pharos. And maybe I'm forgetting something here. I feel like there's probably some key plot element that I'm forgetting because it's just been so long since I played Mass Effect 1. But going off the top of my head, I'm thinking, okay, why did Saren go visit Pharos in the first place? Of course, it's to eventually get the cipher, but how did he know that the cipher was going to be there with the Thorian? How did he know about the existence of the Thorian? My guess is that maybe someone inside Exo Genie, who we just talked about last week, maybe someone inside that corporation tipped him off about this. Hey, there's this unknown species. It takes control of minds of others. It's older than anything we've ever seen. And to Saren, that might have sounded like, okay, that thing probably knows about the Protheans. So let's go there. Let's see if we can get any details on the Protheans, or maybe Sovereign knew. That's the other possibility. If whatever Sovereign knows, it can communicate to Saren. So
why would Sovereign want that?
If Sovereign's ultimate goal is to bring back the Reapers, then bringing Saren closer to the cipher is one step closer to that.
Okay.
So yeah, Sovereign kind of has to walk Saren through these stages, especially during the early stages of indoctrination. I say early in quotation marks because at this point, Saren's been indoctrinated for, I want to say, years. I forget how long he's already been inside Sovereign, to put it bluntly. That's literally where he's flying around in. But but yeah, take a look at this second piece of dialogue that we get with Shiala. I feel like this is a pretty revealing plot-wise, but also we learn a little bit more about Shiala herself.
I was a willing slave when Saren brought me to this world. He needed my biotics to communicate with the Thorian to learn its secrets. Saren offered me in trade. I was sacrificed to secure an alliance between Saren and the Thorian.
Saren's pretty quick to betray his own people.
He was quick to betray the Thorian, too. After he had what he wanted, he ordered the Geth to destroy all evidence of his existence. Saren knows you are searching for the conduit. He knows you are following his steps. He attacked the Thorian so you could not gain the cipher.
What's the cipher? And why did Saren need it?
The beacon on Eden Prime gave you visions. But the visions are unclear, confusing. They were meant for a Prothean mind. To truly comprehend them, you must think like a Prothean. You must understand their culture, their history, their very existence. The Thorian was here long before the Protheans built this city. It watched and studied them. When they died, it consumed them. They became a part of it.
So the Thorian taught Saren to think like a Prothean. How?
The cipher is the very essence of being a Prothean. It cannot be described or explained. It would be like describing color to a creature without eyes. To understand, you must have access to endemic ancestral memory. A viewpoint spanning thousands of Prothean generations. I sensed this ancestral memory, the cipher, when I melded with the Thorian. Our identities merged, our minds intertwined. Such knowledge cannot be taught. It simply exists.
All right, so I want to jump in there because, first of all, thank you to ThaneME2 on YouTube for these clips, which is ironic because we were just talking about Thane earlier. But Jen, what did you gather from this little snippet of lore, but also a little bit of flavor text in terms of who Shiala is?
Listening back to this scene and knowing everything that we know throughout the OG trilogy, I love that we can see that this is where seeds are starting to get sown because of what we come to learn in Mass Effect 3 on Thessia. The Prothean interactions with the Asari, probably genetically enhancing them to be able to send and receive data in a similar fashion to the Protheans. Now, Javik can do it through touch, while the Asari do it through mind melds. And so having a species that is designed to be able to communicate in a similar fashion to the Protheans means that their data, their technology, everything that they left behind, somebody might be able to access that data in the future.
Right. Yeah. The organic infrastructure is a little bit convenient, right? That it makes sense so easily to an Asari. But then, like, Shepard needs the cipher. And, like, it doesn't seem to bother Shiala too much that she got the cipher from the Thorian, didn't need a lot of time to, like, sit on it and make sense of it. she seems, of course, she's a lore vehicle at this point too. So we need to like keep that in mind that, of course, it comes easily to her that she's sitting on like the ancestral memory of all of these Protheans. However, yeah, like we said, it transfers so easily that you have to think that maybe even back then in 2007, the lore was being written that the Protheans had genetically engineered the Asari.
Which I think is so awesome. I love it when we can pull threads, even if they're after the fact threads, we can still see where the ideas were coming from.
Right. And yeah, maybe it's like a convenient retcon in Mass Effect 3 that just so happens to line up with this. But, you know, we know when in fiction, there's rarely coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and she's talking again here about how Saren needed her biotics, and I really, really just don't think that that's what it had anything to do with. And I know that not knowing what a mind meld with the Thorian would do, I don't think that Saren wanted to risk Benezia in that moment, or in turn give Benezia the upper hand by giving her the cipher.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, I think you're probably right that it's a trust thing.
Yeah, I don't think Saren fully trusts Benezia at all. And, well, I mean, we see that in the very violent altercation between the two of them.
Yeah, and yeah. He would be very concerned about giving up his edge, his power over an Asari matriarch, who very well maybe he's already sensed that she is trying to turn the tide. She is trying to change the course of the river, as Liara puts it. So he wouldn't want to put her in that kind of position where she would know more than he does. Also, let's talk about Shiala melding with the Thorian to gain the cipher. Ooh, right? What else did she gain in that melding with the Thorian, who has been alive for countless generations?
Oh my gosh. I mean, the Thorian is pre-Prothean. So to think about how much knowledge Shiala could gain from that, I mean, that's lost lore. That's species unheard of. Oh,
bunch
that would
of
be
cursed
an intense
knowledge.
Overload. True.
Imagine if you could go through the internet search histories of every single human being. What would you learn?
I mean, my YouTube algorithm is already jacked up. I don't need anybody else's influence on it.
Yeah, okay, so I have been, this is a total side tangent, but I have been, like, flooded in my YouTube algorithm of Mass Effect ASMR videos, and, like, props to those content creators if they want to do that, if that's their jam. But when I hear someone that sounds like Liara whispering in my ear that I should just relax and go to sleep, it actually puts me on high alert, and I'm kind of creeped out.
And you infected my feed with it. How dare you share?
That's true. Now, you also get the gift of all of the... There's a lot of Mass Effect ASMR, by the way. It's people who are impersonating Mass Effect characters and doing ASMR, which I don't quite totally understand, but that's a topic for a different day. I also, like... Talking about what Shiala's carrying with her, the fact that a Prothean ancestral memory of thousands of generations could just be handed to Shepard through the Thorian by way of Shiala, and then Shepard, is kind of amazing. Like, it's this ancestral memory that was unique to an entire people, and then was given to a third party, the Thorian, right? And then a fourth party, Shiala, and then a fifth party, Shepard. It's like, wow, okay. And one thing could have gone differently, basically. One thing, more than 50,000 years ago, one thing goes differently. And what if the Thorian never encountered a Prothean to gain that memory?
I mean, that changes the whole course of what we're able to do in this game. You know, thinking about it from a gameplay standpoint, I guess I never really fully understood the importance of the cipher from the Thorian. I'm also wondering if Shepard themselves was primed for this, to receive the cipher because of touching the beacon. What if it had been Hayden, or Ashley, who accidentally got to the beacon first. You know, would this be their story and not Shepard's?
I think so. I think we would just have a new main character, to be honest. But also, Shepard is the N7 here, right? Shepard is like ultimate badass galore. So maybe Ashley or Caden couldn't survive everything that Shepard goes through. I don't know. It's kind of crazy to think that like one of them could easily have been the protagonist, as well as Anderson, right? What if Anderson never gave up? What if Anderson became a Spectre? If Saren didn't successfully sabotage his Spectre run, Anderson becomes the first human Spectre. Anderson is still in command of the Normandy. Anderson is the one who goes on that mission and takes the ground crew.
Will be a whole different game. One that I would totally play. I'd love an alternate universe Mass Effect.
That'd be great. But would Anderson romance Shala? I like to think so. So, and then, yeah, then what? And then if that's the case, Anderson is like the main character. Is Shep still there? Is Shep just like the sidekick? That'd be crazy.
Shep is the new Ashley or Caden.
There we go. Oh, man. A Shep-Anderson romance. I'm sure that there's a market for that out there. Maybe some of you are thinking about that. But all right, Jen, what else did you glean from that little conversation that we have with Shiala?
The indoctrination of it all. I mean, she mentioned that Benezia became indoctrinated by Sovereign, and then she did too. But then when we're talking to her, she doesn't seem indoctrinated anymore. Did she lose it?
That part is not entirely clear, but it does look like because the Thorian kind of supplanted the indoctrination that she did lose it, which is amazing. And if that's the case, then she would be the first person to break free of any Reaper indoctrination that we know about to that point in the lore. We don't see it anywhere else, as far as I know. We don't see it. And it's kind of like there's a gap in the brain, right? And then the Thorian supplants that gap where the Reaper's indoctrination was taking place. And then the Reaper, like Sovereign, flies away, presumably not exerting influence over Shiala anymore because Shiala is under the influence of Thorian. It's not like Reapers have unlimited energy. And then the Thorian's killed, and there's this void where Shiala's mind can come back. It's an amazing precedent that we get, and it's not really addressed right in that moment. But it kind of proves that indoctrination, if caught early enough, maybe at one stage, doesn't necessarily have to mean death.
Right, because all we've seen is temporary breaks in indoctrination. We've never seen a full, true, clean breakaway from and remaining away from an indoctrination.
Right. Only people who have been indoctrinated who manage to, like, sequester a part of their own mind and then ultimately exert full control, if only for a little bit, to end their own lives. That's the only way that we've seen that play out. Other than that, it's like if they're just fully indoctrinated, they're doing the Reaper's bidding, and ultimately their brains become mush and they're not useful to the Reaper anymore, or they're killed in the process. So I also think that it's like the implications here of the Thorian's influence and lasting influence providing some kind of immunization of organics to indoctrination is really fascinating. Like, does the permanent changes that the Thorian has made to those colonists' brains in Zeus Hope, does that permanent change mean that they are going to be able to better fend off indoctrination? We have an answer for that. It could help Zeus Hope in Mass Effect 3, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
I kind of want to throw a question at you now. Do you think killing the Thorian was a good idea?
Actually, no, I don't. And if I was given the option, I would really have to double think, like double guess about it. But like, it's kind of like the Rachni Queen choice, right? And maybe that's why they didn't want to throw that in there, because it's kind of two very similar choices. The Thorian can't leave Pharos, obviously, but the Thorian still has such immense influence and has probably this amazing wealth of knowledge that you'd have to think the Thorian would be a boon to the Crucible Project.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about like 100,000 years of knowledge and history, and we killed it without a second thought.
Yeah, for real. And you know what? It makes sense because it is trying to kill us. So there's that.
Yeah.
But after we kill it, we have to meld with Shiala to receive the cipher. Heyo, we get to meld right in front of our squad mates, and you guys are going to watch. Which, it's possible, by the way, that the squad mate who you are romancing is on that mission with you. So that's kind of awkward. And, you know, it's clear, I'm kind of making a joke here, it's clear that this time melding is not for reproduction. So, but there's a little bit of truth to that joke. Like, this time isn't for reproduction, so why is it so intimate?
All right. I love this topic because intimacy has so many levels to it. There is what most people think about, the moments between lovers or partners that is a physical act. But there are also bonds of friendship or a paternal bond that can be intimate. Sitting by a campfire with the sound of crackling wood while you talk about your goals in life with your best friend, that's a level of intimacy. Or holding your child while humming them to sleep in a darkened room, that's a level of intimacy. Those are all very intimate situations. They all have a sense of bonding, a connection of the heart and mind. And that's also what a Nasari mind meld is. It's a joining of two minds to exchange data, physical sensation, or even emotions. So yes, a lot of mind melds can feel sexual, but don't intend to be.
When I was in middle school and high school, my buddies and I, like my best friends and I, we would nut tap each other. Would you say that that is a level of physical intimacy? Because we were bonding, technically. We also held down each other and farted on each other.
I mean, if we want to get into consent conversations here about tapping your nuts, then yeah, that seems like it was a good level of physical intimacy.
Remember, it's okay to tap your bro's nuts. Just don't tap your nuts together. Anyway, that's way off course. I want to talk about this scene with Shiala because I feel like it kind of sets the tone, right, for how we view Shiala. This is the very first time we meet her, and like you said, it is a mind meld, and it doesn't have to be sexual, but it is intimate, like inherently. There's these two people who are somewhat required to be intimate they're forced kind of by circumstance into an otherwise unexpected level of intimacy by necessity. Like, hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but peer into the deepest reaches of my mind and call me maybe.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yes, it creates a bond for sure, because to let someone into your mind and not knowing what they will see or what they are going to do or what they're going to show us is very unsettling. But the Asari have developed this skill to make it feel right. Having melded with Shiala gives us an almost instant trust. She had the opportunity to rip my mind to shreds a la Morinth, but instead gave me the key to saving the entire galaxy.
That's a good point. She has all the power in her hands. And Mr. Dragon here in chat comes in with an absolute banger. I should have said, hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but peer into the deepest reaches of my mind and embrace eternity. There we go.
Yeah,
we'll make Shiala shirts. Hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but embrace eternity or something like that. Anyway, if you're still not sold, if you're listening to this, you're still not sold on this idea that the encounters with Shiala are inherently, I don't know, they're inherently intimate, go ahead and listen to this sound file that I pulled from the game It happens right before she tells us to embrace eternity. Listen to this.
Try to relax, Commander. Slow, deep breaths. Let go of your physical shell. Reach out to grasp the threads that bind us, one to another.
Okay, wow, I have chills. Among other things. But seriously, why is that so intimate? It's almost like people don't talk to each other that way. You know what I mean? They just don't.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, some of us do. I definitely have some conversations like this with people who are not my physical intimate partner. But that's after years of trust and just knowing the other person. And we don't have that level of intimacy, of interpersonal connected relationships with Shiala. We get this very, very fast. And so that's why it feels more lusty and more sensual and more sexual rather than, you know, if I'm talking to my best friend and we're, you know, trying to have a moment, it's not going to feel sexual to me. But in this moment, it's starting to.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the crazy part is right after that, like that sound clip that we just played, she says, open yourself to the universe, Commander. Embrace eternity. And there's like a creepy like music sting in the background. And then her eyes go black, which is frankly terrifying. So like roller coaster of emotions in about 30 seconds.
So I've noticed that on every Asari, they do this. The eyes go black for the mind meld. And the only time that it creeped me out was when Morinth did it because she smiled at the same moment. And that was like, oh no, something's going very bad here. And then you die.
If I was like a child and I saw that in the game for the first time, I think it would give me nightmares.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say that, you know, with Shiala, the language that she uses to help Shep open their mind is very intimate, but it's not sexual to me. They don't even touch in this scene. Liara has to touch your face while you're mind melding in front of the whole crew, but Shiala doesn't. Now, I know that when I'm telling my truth or explaining a difficult time or situation in my life, I'm not going to be able to do that without some form of reassurance or guidance to get there. My walls have to come down before I'm able to talk openly and freely. And Shiala uses phrases to help Shepard bring down those mental barriers that we all have to keep our thoughts private.
Yeah, it feels like almost a guided meditation, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of sets the tone.
Asari ASMR.
Asari SMR. So it kind of sets the tone for how we think of Shiala, right? For the rest of this game, a mysterious commando who's seen the other side of madness and indoctrination and who has come back to live to tell about it. Someone who carries with her the memory of this long dead intelligent race of forerunners and who embraces us as she shares that memory, reaching into our mind as we reach into hers. In transferring that cipher, we see what she sees, we hear what she hears, and we feel what she feels. So it's inherently pretty intimate, but not because we are looking for intimacy in that moment. And I think that might be one of the most powerful parts of it. We're not looking for intimacy in that moment, but it comes anyway, and it's just part of the mission. It's all business, right? And sometimes I think when we know that things are strictly business, when we know that those feelings should not be attached, that's when those feelings really grow strongest, isn't it?
Yeah. Shiera, it was supposed to be strictly business, and then all of a sudden the switch flipped.
Well, for her, it is business. But I think, you know, for a lot of us, we are not used to thinking about this level of intimacy outside of someone who is our lover. So it makes sense that I, like many other players, feel like there's this level of attraction between Shepard and Shiala, and we can pick up on that more articulated in the next game. So assuming that you don't kill everyone in Zeus Hope, this is a prerequisite, by the way. Don't kill everybody. Don't kill Shiala. The colony survives in Mass Effect 2 and 3. And then you can run into Shiala later on Ilium. And you can ask her, hey, how is Zeus Hope doing? And here's what she says.
We've done a lot of rebuilding. We even salvaged some useful material from the Geth ship you destroyed. The Exogeny researchers got called back to their headquarters, however, along with what was left of the Thorian.
Is it Exogeny pushing colonists around again, or did the Thorian somehow survive our fight?
No. Exogeny has been very supportive of Zeus Hope. They actually seem to want to help us survive, and the Thorian is dead. Though, after all you went through to kill it, I understand your concern. I fear that after our adventure on Pharos, my purpose on Ilium will seem mundane by comparison.
And I'm going to stop it right there. She has green skin now. That wasn't a thing when we last saw her. I mean, it was a thing for her clones, but not for the real Shiala when she got freed by the Thorian. And she tells us that this is one of the long-lasting side effects of being under the control of the Thorian, and that her biotics are also unstable.
Which is so strange. I guess maybe it was an overload of knowledge that she now has access to, that now her biotics are unstable. Also, the green skin thing, I guess, what I don't remember the scientific, like some form of photosynthesis or whatever that gives you, or that gives you the green choir plants green. Yes, there we go.
Yes, maybe she's got chlorophyll. She feels rejuvenated being in the sun, but in winter she kind of wilts. Probably applies to a lot of people, to be honest.
Well, activated depression, man, it's real.
It's what's interesting to me here is that she's so trusting of Exogeny now, right? These are the people that were well aware of the Thorian and, you know, throw informed consent out the window because they were more than willing to experiment on their colonists. So when she says they seem to want to help, okay, yet their scientists were called back to corporate HQ after the source of their mind control experiments on the colonists was killed? You know, like, would you trust Exogeny, Jen? And how about Shiala, for that matter, at this point?
Trusting a corporation, that's a negative, Ghost Rider. But trusting Shiala, yeah, I still do. But that's me. I'm the optimist. I'm the one who holds on to hope. I'm the one that trusts you until you break it.
Is that because she's attractive?
No. I think that, I mean, that's like me as a real ass person. I trust people until they break it. It doesn't matter your level of attraction.
Fair. Yeah, I can definitely fix her. Informed consent becomes a problem again for this colony. And that's what Shiala actually needs help with. That's why she's there in Mass Effect 2. The colonists, it turns out they wanted medical treatment after being freed from the Thorian's mind control. And there was a corporation ready to step in and take advantage of them. Go figure. Anyway, let's hear a little bit more about it.
Headaches or muscle spasms similar to what they experienced while under Thorian control. Sometimes the colonists near another former Thorian victim shared sensations like heat or pain. It has to be a result of trace amounts of the Thorian's parasitic spores. You can see why we'd want it studied.
Yes, I can indeed, because those are some serious side effects. She kind of gone off easy with the whole green skin and unstable biotics thing, but these other people are having, like, you know, serious health concerns. So it makes sense why they would seek out this medical treatment. And Shiala tells us that there was Baria Frontiers, the company. They reached out to them asking if they needed help. And then Baria Frontiers offered this help by way of a predatory contract. So then this corporation gains permission to experiment with invasive medical tests, she tells us, on these colonists. And the worst part is she can't really do anything because it's just all part of the contract. So then it comes up to us, Shepard, to sort it out with that Barrier Frontiers rep, Irinya. And we ultimately do. Irinya, we find out some sad sob story about her background and why she's so bitter. Ultimately, though, we sort it out. She agrees to basically amend the contract so that these colonists aren't taken advantage of so much. And Shiala is very thankful. She's very thankful. Take a listen to how she responds to us, okay?
Thank you, Shepard. You've saved Zhu's hope again. I don't think I could have. Is it always like this? Yesterday's problems lingering in some new form. Isn't anything ever just fixed?
You've got the power to make a difference, Shiala. Not everyone does.
You're right. You gave us a chance by saving the colony. I can't let them down. I won't. Thank you for what you've done here, Shepard. I'll keep doing what I can. Maybe sometime when I'm not organizing the colony and you're not doing whatever you do.
Okay, wow, that's pretty direct, right? Right after that, she brushes Shep on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone wants under that arm. I see it now.
Yeah, that was a pretty obvious hint there, Shepard, and an invitation as far as I can see.
Okay, so do we get it? Do we get to see Shiala in ME3?
No,
please, and it's, there's a one-nighter.
It is one of the greatest tragedies in this series. No, all we get is an email from her in Mass Effect 3, and I will do a dramatic reading of it right now.
Dear Commander Shepard, I don't know if you've seen the articles, but the people of Zhu's Hope are fighting again. This time, it's the Reapers instead of the Geth. I'm not sure if you remember me, but you helped me back on Ilium. The Thorian is dead now. I can confirm that, but the spores in our bodies remain, and on some level, we are still connected. This is not necessarily a bad thing. As we fight back the Reapers, we feel each other and act with one mind, ignoring pain when the need arises. I'm sure I'm still indoctrinated. I remember Sovereign's voice in my mind when I went willingly to the Thorian as its thrall. But my connection to the people of Zhu's Hope is stronger. It drowns out the Reapers' voices. The situation is imperfect and dangerous. Perhaps the colonists should separate for their own safety. But with one mind, the untrained fight with the skill of veteran commandos. Our force is strong. I have not forgotten how you helped us, how you spared me. We are leaving Pharaoh soon, and when the time comes, we will fight with you.
That was my dramatic Shiala impersonation.
Infantry Slim in chat is asking for more seductive N7.
Usually they pay me first, or at least take me out to dinner. I will keep the Asari N7 legend to a minimum. But if, a final fun fact about Shiala, in case anyone was listening to those actual clips of the Shiala voice actor and things sounded familiar, if you watch Desperate Housewives, it turns out the voice actor for Shiala also was Xiao Mei in Desperate Housewives, who was, I believe, the housekeeper of Eva Longoria's character, which this is a really obscure old reference at this point, but more pertinently, the voice actor for Shiala also voiced Shaira, who you brought up earlier.
Shaira the consort. Okay, wow. All right. She definitely is able to hit the sexy Asari tones.
Yes.
She got that down pat.
And that might be like part of why we are primed to kind of feel, maybe, because at this point, when you meet Shiala, most of us have already met Shaira. So maybe that's like a little clue in our brains. Like we place the voice with that memory of Shaira, but we can't tell why, because maybe if we don't identify it as such. Anyway, That's just speculation from me. That's enough about Shiala. We got more to talk about when we come back from the midbreak, because there's a whole slew of things to talk about on Ilium when it comes to indentured servitude. But let's go over to the midbreak.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
Well, okay, Ashley, you can blame the extranet and video games, but I'm going to blame Shiala for what young men have ideas of what Asari are like. We don't have any new reviews today, not as far as I saw, but we do have a new Tier 4 patron, Yukon. Yukon, thank you so much for supporting the show and jumping aboard. We also have some Tier 5 patrons to shout out. William, Superfly440, Redtrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, Ed Boy, Draco, and, of course... We have received direct orders from our Tier 6 patron, our Reaper tier patron, Commander Shrinky Shep, who has continued his very generous support of this podcast. And his status at Tier 6 allows him to pick one episode topic per month that we will cover. And we've received our recent orders from our Reaper patron. We will be covering that next week. But Genesis and I will have to huddle about that. Now Genesis... You started this sound effects pop quiz, but I have a voice line. I have a voice line for you that I need you to go ahead and place for me, okay? This is, I've lengthened it on purpose to make it easier to place, but let's see if you can spot it, okay? Tell me who it is and what the context is. All right, let's go.
I still remember my XO asking... what my orders were. Shepard, I said. Let's see what we can find.
All right.
Okay, so Google Meets distorted that, so I wasn't able to fully hear it, but I believe that that was Anderson in some of the recordings that he does on the Citadel DLC, like you can listen to them in his apartment.
Oh, man, nailed it. Yes, that was it. It was the very first recording over by the piano.
Okay. Sorry, my phone also just picked that up as if I was trying to talk to it.
So, yes, well, we didn't hear your phone too much. I heard a little bit. But anyway, yes, that was indeed Anderson in the Citadel DLC. It was one of my favorite Anderson lines, and I wish I could have found a cleaner version of him talking, but it's all distorted like it's coming through a datapad. And I literally pulled that game file or that file from the game itself. So I think it was just put in there with those distorted effects. Wish it could have been a little bit better, but you nailed it. I love that line from Anderson. So, all right, applause. For Genesis, she got it right without hesitation, even though Google Meets didn't want to let her hear it in its purity. All right, let's get back with the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different, very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
Okay, and we are back with the second half of the show, and Jen... we've got to talk about kind of an uncomfortable topic that comes up during the missions on Ilium, and that's that slavery is effectively legal in the Terminus systems, right?
Yeah, it's really, I don't like this topic. The fact that we just went through sexy green alien Shiala and going through all of that to switch to this topic is a little bit harsh, but it's one that we've wanted to talk about for a minute. And it did play off of the corporations conversations that we've been having lately, too. But before that, we can really talk about the indentured servitude questline in Mass Effect 2. We need to talk about the corporation that is involved with the brokering, and that is Synthetic Insights. Now, we learn a bit about them in Mass Effect 1 in the key mission on Novaria. right out the gate, it is important to know that SI is one of only four corporations licensed by the Citadel Council to develop artificial intelligence.
And this is a field of research that is so strictly regulated in Citadel space that it's impressive that this corporation that is developing artificial intelligence is also kind of allowed to operate with impunity in the Terminus systems. And even then, by the way, them being one of four, they have to, by law, they have to operate under strict rules. We learn a lot about those rules in Mass Effect Revelation. It's kind of the source of why the Quarians are treated the way they are, because they went rogue. They did not operate by the rules of artificial intelligence development. It's also one of the reasons why humanity goes to such great lengths to cover up its own AI research that was happening in Mass Effect Revelation.
Yeah, and again, this is very important because it's one of the main reasons that they want to, quote-unquote, hire on the Quarians to help with their developments. Synthetic Insights has several holdings across the galaxy, most notably on Ilium and Novaria. For those of us who paid attention or didn't rush to get the garage pass on Novaria, would have met Lorik Keen. He is the Turian at the hotel bar whose offices have been temporarily shut down. Now, this is a micro-political chaos storm where Administrator Analeas has corrupt dealings with several corporations. Gianna Parsini wants you to get the information, but only Lorik Keen has solid proof of it. But the data is on a terminal inside his office that are being guarded by Analeas's goons.
Okay, so I need to stop right here because we've now mentioned like multiple thirst traps in the Shiala episode. So the Shiala, of course, we already went through that at great length, but also Gianna Parsini. Tragic that we don't get more with Gianna, because she is like this clandestine, pretty cool, suave internal affairs agent who you mentioned, you know, ultimately arrests Analeas after we get the proof through Lorik Keen. But you know what's funny? I also saw online, like on Twitter, way back in the day in Mass Effect Twitter, there's like a substantial amount of people who are thirsty for Lorik Keen.
It's the Turian effect. It's the voice.
It's the flange, the flange effect. Yeah.
The flange effect. But also, at least as a bro shep, you get a kiss from Gianna.
Oh, I thought you were going to say from Lorik.
Not from Lorik. No, you don't get anything from him. You do get a really good hack out of him, though. You can cheat the Paragon Renegade system with him. And
I'm not proud of it, but I've done it. Yep. And I think that there's data on a terminal, right? And that tells us a little bit more about the lore of Synthetic Insights.
Mm-hmm. And we do know that Synthetic Insights may be one of the corporations that contributes a portion of their capital to the Novaria Development Corporation, or NDC. Lorik Keen mentions that SI relies on the, quote, goodwill of the NDC's executive board. So it seems as though this is a very quid pro quo relationship, but Keen doesn't want to be a part of it anymore.
So he could be using us, but we don't really care because we're using him. That's basically the dynamic that's going on.
Well, yeah, we need his garage pass, and the only way that he's going to do it is that we go in and break in and get the information, and the only way that Gianna's going to let us do it is that if we... Yeah, it's a whole domino effect of everybody's using everybody.
Mr. Keen, can we please have your multipass?
Lilu Dallas multipass.
So yeah, it is pretty quid pro quo, I agree, but that's so fitting for Novaria, where it just seems like the adage, no such thing as a free lunch, is in full effect there.
Oh yeah, no free drinks at this bar.
No.
So we do get to know a little bit about what Synthetic Insights actually does. Which is crazy because last week with Exo Jenny, we had no idea what they were selling other than hope and the American dream in space. But we do actually know what SI creates.
Yeah.
Now, example.
Oh. So I was going to say, other than selling hope and also colonizing other worlds and gobbling up the resource rights, that's essentially what they do. They're real estate people with a weird research branch. But yeah, tell me more about what Synthetic Insights does, because I feel like most of the fandom won't actually know. They're just going to like hear Synthetic Insights and go, oh, you know, that does sound familiar.
Yeah. So they created none other than the Gray Box.
Wow. Dramatic sting. That was what we find with the Kasumi DLC, right?
Yes, which I didn't have until Legendary Edition. But, you know, that's how it goes. So this is a very familiar name to those of us who had the Kasumi DLC. And this gives us a lot of insight into what the company does. Yeah, you like that? The Gray Box stores memories that can be recalled by those with the correct access codes. And I know that there was a whole episode all about the Gray Box, so I won't rehash all of that now.
Ironically, I can't remember that. This is the most meta-ironic moment I've ever had on Lorecast, but I am actually blanking on the episode about the Gray Box.
I don't remember if it was like a Kasumi-specific episode or if it was an episode about like technology within Mass Effect, but I know that you've talked extensively about the Gray Box.
Yes, I think I have, and I think it was probably a Kasumi episode. Maybe we did an episode on the Second American Civil War or one of the other Codex entries that comes from that, but yes, I think I do remember talking about the Gray Box. I just don't remember when it was or what the context was. But anyway, it's good to know that Synthetic Insights actually made that thing, and it was originally developed as an aid for Alzheimer's, but then it was marketed at scale very quickly because people realized the value in it, especially Solarians.
Ooh, yeah. Storing all of your data and knowledge that you've gathered in your short lifespan in order to pass it on to the next generation. I could see that. They also created the Sleep Easy series line of security VIs. The Sleep Easy series can run mechs, has a very fast response matrix compared to others of its caliber, and an industry standard cyber warfare defensive suit. The idea of a mech watching me sleep does not invoke sleeping easy to me, but I guess a good security system is something we all need.
You know that there's people who are just hacking into their security mechs to make them other purposeful mechs. Like, do my dishes, do my laundry, do me.
Yeah, not a security mech. No, I mean, maybe a butler mech. Give me a maid mech.
Look, I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum here, but I'm sure that it's happening in the Mass Effect universe. So they're making gray boxes and security mechs. It sounds like they work with electronics a lot.
Mm-hmm. And that's the last little bit of information that we have from Mass Effect 1 is that we can hear in the elevators that SI has been in the news recently with the recent Geth attack on human colonies. Synthetic Insights may have been consulted as experts on artificial intelligence or freshly criticized for their research.
I love these Mass Effect 1 elevator news updates because they're like, they have way larger lore implications than you would guess otherwise, and it's so easy to just, especially in Legendary Edition where you can skip the elevator rides, like this is what people are missing that all of us that had to wait through the original Mass Effect elevator ride had to get forcibly fed as lore during the loading screens.
Yep. And then at some points you just like completely block it out anyways and you're just droning it. But yeah.
Did we get anything about Synthetic Insights in Mass Effect 2?
That we do. Now, the most interaction that we have with SI and ME2 is the mission on Ilium, which is the Ilium Indentured Service. At the Eternity Bar, where you meet Matriarch Athena, and after Conrad Werner is gone, you will see a stressed out Asari speaking to an anxious Quarian. Now, these two are not given names beyond Slave Broker and Quarian. I checked the vids. I went through subtitles and everything. They don't have names, which I don't like. Everyone deserves a name. Give me a name, Bastion. Say my name. If you got that reference, I give you 10 internet points and a knowing nod that we are old.
You want to talk about old? Well, I rode through the terminus on a Quarian with no name.
Oh, Falcor. All right. When we speak to the Slave Broker, she is quick to tell us that SI does not hire slaves and prefers the term indentured servant. I'm going to be holding back the rage until the lore discussion is over because I hate all of this.
It's another heaping dose of corpo speak.
Yeah. Now, the Asari goes on to tell us that Synthetic Insights has a strict non-discrimination employment policy, but they do refrain from hiring slave labor or even indentured servants. But really, it is the Batarians to blame for why humans look down on slavery. So Shepard doesn't really need to be involved in this situation.
Okay.
It's not the Batarians that made me anti-slavery.
So their stance is pretty much that, hey, we're totally not hiring slaves, wink, but maybe you can help us get this slave hired.
Yeah. And that you just need to blame the Batarians for putting a negative spin on slavery.
You know, I love that. Yeah, basically, this Asari's spiel is that slavery gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
I think I know who she's voting for.
Oh, okay. But we are Shepherd right now, and therefore we stick our noses into every situation. So we further question these two and learn that the Quarian has sold herself into indentured servitude and has requested help getting Synthetic Insights to purchase her service contract. The Quarian thought that she could manipulate the stock market, made some bad deals, took out an illegal loan, and then got caught. The Asari slave broker agreed to pay off all of her debts for a 5-year service contract, but that was after she learned that Synthetic Insights wasn't really hiring anyone.
So she sold herself into slavery for a job that no longer existed, basically. Or for a job that didn't exist.
For a job that didn't exist and to completely wipe out her debts. She no longer owes on this illegal loan. She's no longer under a warrant or a threat of arrest for manipulating the stock market and for owing so much money.
I just saw Mickey 17, and this is like weirdly applicable for this. Great movie, by the way. If anyone else is thinking about going to see it, I highly encourage it. You saw it too, Jen?
I haven't seen it, but I saw the trailer for it, and I really want to go.
Yeah, they're weirdly applicable. But yes, that movie is definitely a great one. So how does this put this in context for us about since the end of Mass Effect 1, since Saren attacked the Citadel? Like, what is going on with Synthetic Insights that they would be so concerned about the PR of how indentured servitude is spun?
Yeah, absolutely, because the trust in AI research has decreased since the Geth attack on the Citadel, and taking the company's reputation along with it. And the last thing that it needs is to engage in more practices that the Council disapproves of, including taking on service contracts or purchasing slaves. As a result, the 2 years after the attack, Synthetic Insights barely hires anyone anymore.
So, wait a second. So you're saying that they only feel the need to avoid purchasing indentured servants because they're already under scrutiny for AI research after the Geth attack. That's why they're avoiding hiring indentured servants, and that also in those 2 years since the attack, they've barely hired anyone. Are we to make of that that possibly most of Synthetic Insights employees were indentured servants?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm reading into it as well. Because, I'm sorry, if my company needs people, I'm just going to legitimately hire them, pay them a livable wage. You know, all the things that people should have. Not take on servants and servitudes and slaves.
Yikes. Well, I guess that's one way to get around paying benefits. You could also just schedule them 35 hours a week. But, you know, this is absolutely insane that this is basically how we find out that Synthetic Insights has been creating AI research with indentured servants, like people who don't really have their freedom.
And so thankfully we are Shepherd and we have a morality scale that allows us to manipulate conversations. The best outcome for the Quarian is having enough Paragon or Renegade points to convince the slaver to release the Quarian from her contract, so still paying off all the debts and releasing that portion, but also convincing the SI rep to take over that contract. So the Quarian still gets a job at much better terms than what was originally negotiated.
The Art of the Deal by Commander Shepard. Yeah, I remember feeling kind of icky about this quest when I did it the first time because it's not so obvious how to get that outcome that you just described. Like, the most obvious ways are like, sorry, you're not getting the job because they don't want to hire an indentured servant. Or, okay, I convinced them that hiring an indentured servant was fine.
Yeah, even if you tell the broker right out the gate, no, don't do this to her. You get some Paragon points, but the broker's like, no, I'm still going to do what I was originally intended to do. So you don't get a good resolution out of that. You can offer to buy the slave yourself, which I think just feels and sounds horrible. But the reason that you can't do that is that it's like over 100,000 credits, which you don't really have the capability of having at that point in the game through legitimate means. And she can't leave Ilium. So therefore, she can't go on your ship. And what would happen to the Quarian if now you've bought her freedom, but she literally is in the exact same space of, I have no way to make an income. I have no place to go. I can't leave Ilium because I am still under house planet arrest.
And so this is where I feel like if we had kind of quantum decision making in RPGs that were programmed in there, we could just be like, you know what? Screw it. I don't care about the rules of this planet. We're just going to take you on the ship and we're going to smuggle you to freedom. So, and by the way, here's a lot of money to get yourself started. Bye.
Yeah. Smuggle her off planet and send her off with a bunch of creds. That would work.
You know how often I run into that in RPGs where I'm like someone is describing in an RPG some hardship they're going through, and I wish that there was an option for me to just give them money? Like, this happens a lot, actually. This, like, I will be like, but like, basically the only two options are like, man, that sucks. And like, the other one's like, man, that sucks, but more empathetic.
Man, that sucks. Let me try and give you some gear that I collected. Here's a sandwich that I found on the side of the road.
Right. Yeah, I could have sworn in like Starfield or maybe Cyberpunk, some NPC was telling me about how they were like, they really wanted to go to college, but they couldn't afford it. And like they had these dreams of getting off world and, you know, blah, 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 and getting out of their town or whatever. And I was like, why don't I have an option to just pay for their tuition? I have so much money. Anyway, yeah. Maybe that's just different kind of player that I am than any other person is. But wow, that was a really dark little foray into corporate culture, at least in part of the Terminus systems. So now we know enough about synthetic insights, I suppose, and more importantly, the slave trade on Ilium. All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up this week's Lorecast episode. Stay tuned for next week, guys. We haven't decided what we're going to cover yet. We have a couple of ideas, orders given to us from on high, and we will be deciding that soon. They are closely related. Either one is going to be closely related. But Jen, what do you have got going on in the next week, and how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I'm on all the Discords, also on Blue Sky, and I have two other podcasts, the Cyberpunk Lorecast and Two Girls, One Ship.
All right, and I may be going on paternity leave very soon. Like, you know, we are in the final stretch. Our son's due date is April 11th, which is Commander Shepard's birthday. I crap you not, everybody. If that actually happens, it's going to be nuts. I did not time that on purpose. I'm not that good. But we'll see. Anyway, I'm just saying that because I could be going on paternity leave soon. Obviously, the week that my son arrives, I am going to have to take a week off the Lorecast. But that is to be seen. In the meantime, I am going to be streaming. I swear I'm going to be streaming. I've just been trying to enjoy some me time as I can, while I can. And I'm still streaming my Cyberpunk playthrough, my first post 2.0 update playthrough, and also my first playthrough since Phantom Liberty came out. So, going to be streaming that. Follow me on Twitch at N7Legend, also N7Legend on Blue Sky, and we've got a Mass Effect Lorecast Twitch account. So if you want to come see our faces, and while we're doing this live, come by. We're recording on Mondays around 6:30 to 7. Kind of depends on when we get home from work at that time. So give us a follow. Help us get to affiliate on the Mass Effect Lorecast Twitch account. That would be awesome if you guys could help with that. All we need for that is for you to just show up and hang out and just chat if you want. So that's what we got going on for now. But until next time, Spectres, we should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.